This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geeks, show number 657 with Dr. Brian Friedlander, recorded on September 4th, 2025. Here on Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all the favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home. News, reviews, product updates, and conversation all through the Average Tech Guy. I'm your host, Jim Costa, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in a beautiful Bellevue, Nebraska. It's the middle of August. No, it's not. It's September. And it's, I don't know what day it is.
Yeah.
We are already experiencing, we had a 40 degree start this morning.
Wow.
Like September, Labor Day weekend, 40 degrees. That's a little early. How's weather? You're out on the East Coast. How's the weather in your neck of the
woods? Yeah, so in New Jersey, it was actually pretty nice. It actually went up to 80 today. We did have some a severe rainstorm this evening. But the last couple of days, we've had, you know, mid-70s and low humidity. So it's been really fantastic.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. I'm kind of hoping, like, we always get this false fall that comes in and everybody gets super excited. It's going to be great. You know, they start pulling out pants and hoodies. I mean, I have my Chiefs hoodie on just because the NFL starts football this weekend.
Right. So
I'm kind of celebrating that. Right. But we kind of get this false fall and everybody's like, it's here. And then you get this 2 weeks of just crazy heat again. You know, it's coming again, right? You'll have a couple more hot days, right? Before fall really kicks in. Okay.
Yeah. Awesome. It's false. Fall weather is always interesting here on the East Coast.
Yeah. We always think it's going to be something different, and it's always the same. You know, always like, this will be, you know, anyways. Well, we'll post a show with some world-class show notes at theaverageguy.tv. Big thanks to our Patreon subscribers. If you're one of those, thank you for what you do. We just have one plan, $5 a month. If you want to join, jump on that team for 1 month or for as many as you want, theaverageguy.tv/Patreon. But you guys know I've been doing a bunch of solar work lately, and that kind of helps work with all that. It's not the cheapest thing in the world, although solar's getting cheaper. It's crazy. You can join that team, theaverageguy.tv/Patreon. Thank you for using that affiliate link over there on Amazon as well. If you head out to Amazon.com or head out to theaverageguy.tv, there's a link you can click through upper right-hand corner. Just click through. Nothing more you need to do. Just benefits the network, and we appreciate you guys doing. Many of you have been doing that over the last couple months, so thanks for getting that done as well. And then finally, big thanks to Jay Franzi, who joined me 2 weeks ago. I took last week off just due to some commitments, but big thanks, Jay, for coming on. I always appreciate having you on there. Another friend of the show, he's back. It's been a year. It's been a couple years. Yep. Dr. Brian Friedlander is with me tonight. Brian, welcome back.
Yeah, it's great to be back. And, you know, I sent you an email because there's been, you know, a lot of changes happening in the field, especially with all the new technology and especially AI and its, you know, its influence on our field. So, I mean, for those of you that don't know me, I was a professor of education, but over the last 40 years, I also have a background as a psychologist. I've been doing assistive technology consulting and training implementation. And so, you know, I've been in the field for a long time. And in the last year, the AI has just basically, you know, kind of touched all the technology that I work with. And it's pretty incredible what students can do, you know, if they have the knowledge, the right tools, and, you know, can employ it in their workflow. It is amazing.
Yeah. 2.5 years ago, last time we had you on. Yep. We talked a lot about tablets and pens and some of the technology going there. AI had yet to really break out, right? We'd kind of gone through the first version of AI, which had gone terribly wrong. And they were like, whoa, better pull back from this. I would think the last 2.5 years, AI has exploded onto the scene. We've talked about it a bunch here. Mm-hmm. Give us a little bit of an overview. If you think of the last 2.5 years and what AI brings to assistive technology, right? Helping people do things. Where have you really seen it be most beneficial?
Well, I mean, I've seen, you know, it's kind of impacted just about in every arena, but just to give, you know, the listeners an idea. So, you know, I work with a lot of students that have difficulty in the area of writing. And so a lot of times I call it white screen paralysis. They open up Microsoft Word, Google Doc, and they have to write an essay or something. And one of the tools that I've been working with students with is called AOA. That's A-Y-O-A. And it's a mind mapping tool, but it has AI built in. So if you need to write, let's say you're in an art history class and you have to write a report, let's say, or an essay about, let's say, Vincent van Gogh, you could just put Vincent van Gogh as your topic, and then the AI will generate ideas in a mind map for you about Vincent van Gogh, so that you can then, you know, kind of take a look at, you know, what the ideas are, and then begin to develop an essay around some of the ideas that were, you know, maybe, you know, created by AI, because then you can then go in, write, you know, take notes, add citations, open it up, not only in a mind map, but in an outline, reorganize it, and then import it into Google Docs or Microsoft Word. So that's just like one example. For teachers, there's a number of tools. We've been talking about differentiation of instruction for many, many years in the area of special education. And there are a number of tools like Brisk Teaching, Diffit, Magic School AI. And these tools will allow teachers to go in. So if you're in it, as an example, if you're teaching 10th grade history, you will have in your class students that can read anywhere, maybe from a fifth grade reading level all the way through a college reading level. And so teachers can easily create Google slide decks, study guides, podcasts, and they can change the level of the text for whatever students they need and deliver it to them in whatever format's best. So for students that learn best through listening, teachers can use the Brisk Teaching and create. From the teacher standpoint, it allows them to create, very individualized educational materials that then they can push out to the students based on their, their reading, and also comprehension levels, which is unbelievable. I mean, that was, we could only have dreamed that was going to be possible to do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we often think of AI as the assistant of taking basic content and making more of it or expanding it more.
Right, right.
We don't often think of it going the other direction. In other words, taking complicated or complex wording and bringing it back to a certain reading level.
Right. So I mean, even when you take a look at, for those of you who maybe have worked with Google LM, I mean, that's a really powerful tool that teachers can use to what I like is vet their own material and create that podcast or create a study guide or create a notebook with the content that students can then reference. And that's, what's exciting too is that, a lot of these tools in the past were very expensive because they were called assistive technology. Now you have, tools in the mainstream that do a lot of the heavy lifting, at minimal or no cost at all, especially in districts that are part of the, the Google ecosystem. It's really exciting to see. I mean, I don't know if you played around with the Google LM with podcasts. So teacher could put vetted material and then you get a podcast you have two individuals who have a conversation about the content that you put into Google LM. So it's a great delivery, for students.
For in that space, when we're thinking about using a podcast for learning, where is that most helpful? Where are the students struggling the most where they would use that instead of reading or
yeah? Well, I mean, a lot of the students I work with, they're diagnosed with dyslexia or, have a reading disability. So a lot of these students have always relied on audiobooks or audio content. So this makes it really easy for the teacher to create, audio material, basically, to the click of a button, which is exciting. And Google LM will also create a mind map as well. So for students that need to visualize the more complex information, sort of break it down, that's another tool. I just did a webinar for a company that has mindmap.ai. And they do, you know, that mind mapping application does the same thing. And not only can you go with both AOA and MindMap AI, you can go either way. So I can drop a PDF file on, let's say, photosynthesis, and it will create a mind map, break out the important concepts into a visual, visual product. Or you can even do an audio file, or, you know, a movie, and it will basically, through AI, pull out the most important information and serve it up to the student in a different format, which is often very important for the students that I work with.
In the early days of AI, right, we had problems with massive hallucinations, right? It'd go kind of crazy. It's gotten better.
Yes.
But in this space that you're working in, and especially when we're thinking about assisting students who might have a reading disability or what, do you worry about the, you know, one question, do you worry about that? And two, is it getting better? Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely getting better. I mean, certainly, we do worry about that. And I think, all the companies, Google, OpenAI, they're doing a better job at it. That's why, I think what we're going to see is more vetted AI. And I think, Google LM at least starts out that way because it allows teachers to select the materials that it's processing. So it won't go beyond that. So I think it's going to be helpful. But I think we will see, AI sites that are vetted, by educators, by other companies that, to kind of, make sure that the information, is valid and is truthful. I mean, with anything else, I think teachers need to check it before they push it out. That's important. But companies like Brisk, Magic AI, Diffit, they're all doing, they're vetting a lot of the material ahead of time as well. That's part of their, underlying LLM. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there could be I'm not saying people are doing this, but there could be maybe a tendency. That's probably the wrong word, but I need to feed the AI some information for my students. Where do I get that information from? I might query AI first to get it, and then you're just like it. Vetting is the right word, right?
Yeah,
then you got to be real careful.
Yeah, right? The other thing too is, teachers often get a lot of the publishers provide them with a lot of materials in PDF format ahead of time. So they could feed, a section about photosynthesis or, a section on history and feed it in. And so that, you're getting, valid and accurate information, but, caveat emptor, I think it's important for teachers to check to make sure at the end of the day that what they're delivering is appropriate and accurate. That's important.
Have you had any experience on your side where working with AI where you've just seen it get a little liberal, so to speak, on that? Not in a political sense.
Yeah, I understand.
I'm making up this answer because I don't want to be wrong. Have you seen that in some of the work?
I haven't seen too much. It's getting a lot better.
It is getting
better. Really is. It's pretty amazing. Not only, in terms of, the mind mapping with Google LM, grammar checking through Grammarly AI. Those are kind of tools that are really important for students with writing disabilities. Of course, you have the other side of the formula where you have students handing in written work that's done totally by AI, which is another entire,
In the workforce, we don't care, to be honest. Like if we're preparing students to be in the workforce,
right?
There isn't a lot, like at the end of the day, if it's good and it sells good enough, you created it.
As an example, I've been working with some companies, international companies, or companies approach me who are not familiar with the U.S. market in education, special education. And I can go into Microsoft Word and I can create a marketing plan in about a minute. With a proposal, with activities, right. 6 months, so it is pretty amazing what is possible. And I think that one of the areas that's very challenging for the students I work with, especially as they move to college, is note-taking for a lot of factors. One, it's kind of paying attention. It's also handwriting. It's the processing. And so a lot of students have note-taking accommodations, and that's where AI has really shined. And that's where we have, I mean, I've been testing a crazy number of products this summer around note-taking and AI. I mean, it's pretty incredible what's available to students as an accommodation. Let me see if I can pull this out.
Brian, so, as you're pulling that up, let me ask you this question. Are we to a point, though, where the idea of physically taking notes isn't necessary anymore? In other words, if I'm listening to someone, I could be recording it. It could be transcribed.
Yes.
And then I could easily have AI say, hey, tell me the most important parts of this based on that. And it'll just bring back a summary.
Yeah. Me, yeah. Right? I mean, there are still tremendous benefits of, and the research supports the handwriting aspect of note taking. Even if you're using an AI device, it still would be helpful from the standpoint of learning the material to do some handwriting. So I don't know if you could. So this is.
Let me move you here, and then I'll make you big screen so we can do that. There we go.
Did I freeze? Give it,
yeah, you did. I can still hear you. Okay. It's a good screenshot of you.
Okay. So this is Claude Note. It's like the size of a credit card. It's in a MagSafe case, so you can attach it to your Android or your iPhone. And so a student can walk in, just tap the button, and it will record the lecture. And when they're done, it automatically transfers it to the Claude Note app on my iPhone over Bluetooth. And then the AI kicks in. I can choose whether this was like a meeting, a lecture, and it gives me a full transcript. It also will break out tasks, summaries, and then I can always query it as well. You can see this is like paper. This is paper thin. I mean, it's
credit card size is what they say on their website, right? Yeah. And that's still in preview, right? They're taking orders.
This is available. This has been out for about a little over a year now.
Oh, okay.
They have a pen.
I'm looking at the Note Pro. They have a Pro version.
Pro version. And so, I mean, you could do that. You have devices like this. This is the iFlyTek. This actually can do the transcription on the device without any Wi-Fi. It's probably not quite as good, but if you're working in an environment that doesn't allow Wi-Fi connectivity, this will provide transcripts. Then what you do is you plug this into your Mac, PC, Chromebook, and you can pull off the TXT file or the MP3 file from it. So that's kind of a nice feature.
Yeah, that's cool. And it's basically it's doing the transcriptions locally, right?
At that point. Right. On the device. It's doing, let me guess.
Right. Right. Yeah. So for folks who are worried about privacy, right, and not pushing those transcripts to the cloud.
Correct.
That would be a nice device to be able to transcribe conversations that you want to keep private.
Right. And, some of the companies are doing, encryption, but some are HIPAA compatible. So it just depends. And then you have things like this is another device from TC Tech. It's just a digital recorder. And this also, once you're done recording, the same thing, you have an app on your phone. It looks like they're using the same app as Claude's using to do the AI. You get the transcript. Most of these have also, this cost associated with the transcription. So, just buyer beware. But again, for a college student, you can come in and you can see just how small that is. And the AI does a really good job of providing the transcript and the other parts of it, which would be very helpful.
Brian, you talk about these tools in the context of schooling or students.
Yeah.
But do you think there's some application? Like, I mean, this wouldn't be hard today where most of the meetings I'm in get transcribed in some form or fashion.
Right.
We're virtual for half of them for the most part. Those, I mean, Zoom is offering me a transcription every time anyways. You want to get the insights of this. How viable do you think it is where I leave a device? And there's a couple companies doing this. There's a company called Sesame that is embedding them in glasses that's listening all day, listening to your conversations and the meeting you're in. And then at the end of the day, getting a debrief, a summary. I don't know how valuable from a business perspective. I know students could benefit from this, but how much benefit do you think from a business perspective there is to a daily summary, so to speak, of your day?
Or I think for, again, you know, I think for, I mean, like any other population, there's a percentage of individuals who are working in businesses that have attentional issues, learning issues. And so for them, it could be really important as well. So I think it'd be really helpful. I think it's one of including it into your workflow where it becomes a consistent practice. I think that's the problem, you know, I mean, because you can get, some of the transcripts can be quite lengthy, as you know. I mean, so getting the summary can be really important as well. I mean, so those are some of the tools that, you know, college students are using. They're also using, you know, stuff like Otter AI that, you know, in Zoom meetings and things like that, that's popular.
Otter's been around. I still use Otter for the podcast. So at the end on the weekends, you know, so this podcast, I'll at the end, have it edited and minor edits. And then I have Auphonic produces the audio version for me. I push the MP3 to Otter and it does not just transcriptions, but it does some summary. It does some tasks.
Yeah.
It tries to figure out some of those kinds of things. I use the time stamped summary for podcast notes. They've been around a long time. This has been the surprising thing. Otter has been doing this a while.
Yeah, they're based out of the West Coast. So a lot of the colleges and universities that need to provide notes for students with disabilities are using Otter AI in the classroom or providing licenses for them to use it, whether they're on a virtual meeting or just on their phones. That's been pretty cool. And then some of you may be familiar with LiveScribe. they just came out with this new pen called the Ink Pen, INQ. And what's neat about this, it's just a regular, you know, it's a regular pen, except it has a camera at the base. And it uses an app on your Android or iPhone. And anything I write in a paper notebook that they publish, because that is a watermark, gets basically like scanned and transcribed to my app on my iPhone. But what they've added with the software now is an AI component. So I can take my handwriting, it gets transcribed, and then an AI agent can act on my handwritten notes and provide me with a summary or suggest, you know, I ask it some additional information based on what I wrote. So you're getting the best of both handwriting, and you can also get a full transcript, or this also synchronizes the audio with the handwriting. So you can go back to a specific location in your handwritten notes and just listen to that, let's say, part of the lecture that you want to. This just came out a couple of weeks ago, and it's showing a lot of promise. And this was a really popular tool at the university level. The previous versions had basically microphones and speakers built in, but now they've offloaded that to the smartphone. But it has, you know, increased functionality because you can interact with your handwritten notes, which is really fascinating. I see, Jim, you put up the link.
Folks, want to check it out. I'll have in the show notes as well as the live chat. Brian, it's interesting. I'm still writing. So for me in my business process, during the day is I am getting things I need to remember. I'm getting a pen. I'm writing. I am still writing those things down. Right. And I have a lot of friends that go to OneNote and they create lists that way. But you talked about the benefit of writing. And I, to me, I still find value in handwritten lists of things. For me, that works. Now, maybe that's a generational thing, and maybe that'll disappear with the next generation.
I mean, if you, you know, if, you know, and so, I mean, I have some students that are also turning to something like the Remarkable or e-ink devices. Again, what's nice, again, I also work with a lot of students that have attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, have tremendous difficulty keeping organized, especially with paper.
Yeah.
And so devices like this or Supernote or, you know, Onyx books or, you know, Remarkable devices can be another great tool. And they all have varied, you know, features depending upon what you want to prioritize. So yeah. I see, do you use iPad apps that recognize such as, I do use GoodNotes, which is a fantastic app on the iPad. Require them to handwrite it. Yeah, interesting. Interesting.
Yes, Tony says my daughter was doing homework last night and the teacher required them to handwrite it. And I think, let's talk about this for a second, because I think this is super important.
Yeah.
I'm in a spot. So I was out at a university setting three or four weeks ago. And I had a group of educators / students / administrators. And we had two sessions being offered. And one was an AI session. And then one was my session where we talked about, you know, my day job is coaching, right?
So
we were talking about coaching tips and tricks. And I didn't mention AI in my title. And then they got in there and my third tip was AI, right? Man, there was an audible groan in the room. Like, it was like, oh. And I said, I stopped for a second. I'm like, okay, what's that all about? Like, tell me what you guys are thinking here that you were groaning. And they're like, well, if we wanted AI, we would have gone to the AI session. They wanted to come, they were hoping to come to, I think, an AI free session, right? So I kind of wonder in the education space, is there a little bit of pushback? You know, a lot of educators are caught between a rock and a hard place.
Yes.
They're being told, hey, students, you got to do, this is what reminded me of this. You got to do your homework. I need to see it. You need to write it. It needs to be old school. It kind of reminds me of the 70s when we started getting calculators. And everybody was like, you got to show your math because there's going to, you know, you're going to be at a time when you're not going to be near a calculator and you're not. And it's like, by the way, that future never happened. We always have had calculators near us, right? From that standpoint. But do you catch a little bit of the tension in your space, in the education space, between a AI could do a lot of it, and yet we still want students to learn some of these things, I think.
It is a real balancing act. Cause I mean, I think the challenge is to get students to take the time to really think and reflect and process. I mean, I think what's happening is they're going from, you know, A to B, you know, in a nanosecond. And it's like, you know, we had to break it down and think about what we were, what the process was, and now there's not that much of it. And I think that's where teachers need to kind of slow them down. And what's happening too is some teachers are requiring more work to be done in the classroom so they can really see what the student is able to do. I mean, like I said, you know, you can have, you know, the assignment is go home and write a research paper or write an essay about, you know, some topic, and the kids come in and, you know, they spend 20 seconds, you know, on AI and wrote it for them, you know. And so it's the deep thought, the concentration and the focus that is really key. And the skill, I mean, there are still, I think, some students may be missing some critical skills, or they're jumping over, you know, having to learn certain skills in the process, which are important.
What if we move the critical skills thinking to the prompt and let the, you know, I also have heard of some teachers using AI to grade their papers.
Yes.
Right. Right. Yes. And so you kind of think, hey, wait a minute. If it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander, right? That hasn't been said in a thousand years. But
that's probably been done for a while now. I mean, there's a lot of companies that offer that, you know, service. I mean, you know, you had, you know, English teachers in a high school. They were teaching, you know, five periods with 20 students, and it was like, you know, they give them an essay. And then what happened on the other end is you had teachers who stopped giving students assignments because they didn't want to have to grade 100 papers, in a day.
That'd be me. That'd be me, by the way. I would not want to grade. I was going to be a teacher, and I'm like, I don't want to grade papers ever. Not interested.
It's a balancing act, and teachers are trying to figure out, how they can determine whether the students really have the skills or it's students using.
Listen, I would think, so this is just me thinking, with me on this one. I would think if I was an educator in this setting, I would add more work to the assignments. And then I would say, create these assignments and then provide me the prompts that you used because I want to see the thinking. Listen, I've spent a lot of time in the last 3, 4, 5 months doing prompt engineering, in a way of thinking like, hey, how do I make this process more efficient for me? I've spent more time on prompts than I ever spent actually doing the because I never do the work. It was too hard. I'm like, I'm not going to get into Excel. I got to write code. I'm not interested in it.
Right.
Now I'm like, hey, take this Excel thing. And I understand enough to tell me, join it on this, sort by that, get these kinds of things done.
Yeah.
I spent the prompt that I put together for this current assignment I'm working on at work was Leonardo da Vinci kind of prompt thing. Like, I was so proud of that prompt. but it caused me to think critically.
Right.
Like, the prompt engineering caused me to think critically about the query. And by the way, the whole time the AI is trying to help me out, it's like, hey, maybe you ought to think about it this way, kind of thing. Like,
that's true. I mean, I had pulled like a database of supervisors in a county from a county directory, and then when I brought it into Google Sheets, the information was wrong, and I was able to with Gemini create a formula to separate the text in the column. And it was amazing. You know, it took me about 10 minutes, but I created the prompt to figure it out, to pull it out into its own.
Yeah. I just wonder if there's some opportunity from an education standpoint, because in the business, we don't care, to be honest. It's like, there's no showing your work. Like, what did you create? And the cooler it is with the less time, like it's better. Like we're rewarding the folks that are doing this who are doing more in less time. Again, the output is at the end of the day in business, what sells, right?
Correct.
And if it sells, who cares how you got to it, right?
Yeah.
From that standpoint. But I do wonder in prompt engineering if there's some, when you're thinking about critical, and listen, I'm not debating critical thinking skills with you, because I value them as well, right? We need to be able to think critically, but I wonder if we need to back up the process a little bit and instead of thinking, critical thinking being on the output, the critical thinking is done on the input, right?
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. Yeah. It is. Yeah, it is. So I want to show, this is not out yet, but this is brand new. This is the Flotika Scribe. It's a pen, as you can see. So this is a digital audio recorder, and it has a button over here. So to start the recording, you just tap the top knock here. And then when you're listening, so you can write handwritten notes, but when you're listening, if you think something's important, you just tap the button here. And then what happens is that once the audio file is sent over to the app, it prioritizes the information that, in a sense, you highlighted because you tapped that button while you were listening from it. So this is now on a Kickstarter, but I've been kind of testing it out. And again, the software does a really good job of, kind of prioritizing. And so what happens is when you see the transcript and the prioritization based on what you tapped, it will be in bold in the transcript.
Oh, that's cool.
This is pretty cool. And again, It's not actually scanning your notes. It's just a pen and basically an audio transcription. So it's kind of interesting tool.
Yeah, you're writing on that on a regular paper.
Regular paper, it could be a pad, yeah. Yellow pad. Yeah. So
does it know what you're writing or no?
No, it doesn't. It's not okay. Capturing the handwriting. It's just basically lets you take notes on anything, but it's basically a sophisticated digital audio recorder.
But from AI. A James Bond standpoint, when you want to record something, you click the pen twice or whatever.
Exactly.
And it starts recording for you, and then you click it again. Do you have, how long can that go in a recording session, do you think? A couple hours, maybe?
Or yeah, a couple hours. Yeah, a couple hours. Yeah, we can. Yeah, I see you put the Flowtika.ai. Yeah, it has all those stats. I mean, sometimes people say, well, why can't you use your phone? And that is true. I mean, I've been using like voice notes on my phone, or you can use Otter AI to record audio. But, what happens is that it tends to wear the battery down, which is an issue. And there are still some settings, even at the college level, definitely in the public schools, where teachers do not want your cell phone out. So, so then you can use one of these other devices to do that without having your cell phone out.
Listen, the school that my daughter's a librarian now at a public high school, and they just implemented a cell phone ban in class.
Right.
And so this year, first year, we've had cell phones for a while, but first year, like no cell phones in class.
Right.
And this could be from an assistive tech standpoint or from any tech standpoint.
Right.
By the way, I think there's great opportunities for all students to benefit from
These
kind. Let me, Brian, in your experience, when you think about students, is it one thing that gets them over the hump? It's like, is it a pen like this? Or do you find in a lot of cases students are using multiple kinds of technology to get over the hump when they need an assistant?
Yeah, it's generally multiple kinds of things. So it could be a digital. I've been working on and off with a student. He's now, I think, like 23. He's in college graduating. I started working with him in middle school. And for him, the LiveScribe pen has proven to be indispensable for him, And also he also uses, audio books, whether it be from Audible or Learning Ally. So it's generally kind of a mix of different tools. And of course, he'll use, spell checking and Microsoft Word or Google Docs and probably Grammarly. So it's usually a mix of different applications. And that's the kind of work that I do, is trying to figure out what that mix is of the different applications that make the most sense for the student. There's a very popular application that's used at the college level. They changed the name. It used to be called Glean. It's now called Genio Notes, G-E-N-I-O Notes. And a lot of colleges are using it because what it allows the students to do is they can preload that PowerPoint deck or the Google slide deck. And then what happens is they record the audio that's attached to each slide. And so they can easily go back and listen to the lecturer talk about that particular slide. When the lecture is over, it can create an entire, audio transcript, a summary. But it allows them to, and a quiz. That's the other thing too, is a lot of the AI tools are now offering quizzing based on the content of what that lecture was. So students can do some self-assessment,
I'd have been so much better of a college student if I would have had any, like, word processors were just coming out when I was a college student.
Okay, I started college. I went to Brooklyn College, which is part of the City University of New York, a public college. I took chemistry, and is when the Bomar brain came out, and I was taking chemistry, and at that point I think it was like $250, and they wouldn't let us use it because they didn't think it was fair that some families could afford the $250. So we used the old slide rule. That was horrible.
I missed that. I missed slide rules by about 6 years. And that was, we had just started getting some of the early TI calculators.
TI calculators.
And so, yeah, I kind of missed there. They were still talking about it. Some of the old, teachers were still talking about it. So let me, Brian, let me ask you this question. Yeah. So when we think about AI, you've mentioned Grammarly a couple times,
right?
And, you know, sometimes I'll take some written content. Just today, I took the contents of one of our newsletters,
right,
and I dropped it into ChatGPT and I said, hey, summarize this for me in a paragraph, right? Did a great job.
Right.
So boom, quickly done. I mean, I could have done that, but quickly done, boom, boom, boom. Right. Then I took that and before I could even move it, Grammarly had an opinion of it. And it was like, hey, you know, because it's embedded in the web browser and I have Grammarly associated with it. And then it was like, that's not right. And I changed a word and then the ChatGPT was like, no, it needs to be this word. And there's all, sometimes I'm seeing in the work that I'm doing, I'm seeing a difference in opinion between AIs, right? Even on grammar,
like
the way, right? Sentence structure and grammar and some of those kinds of things. Do you think? Yeah. Think about it. You know, you might have a friend say these were all friends of yours. They all might have a different opinion about the way a sentence should be structured, right? They've got some kind of learning model that they used.
Yeah.
Do you think, I've often thought it would be cool to take Copilot and ChatGPT and plug them in together so they can talk to each other and then just throw in something like discuss quantum physics and let them just go at each other for, you know, because the new AIs, right? All these new AIs have a voice mode where they can hear, right, what's being said.
Yeah.
You ever worry about that of like difference? Now we have a spot where there's maybe a difference of opinion, certainly not when I say opinion, I don't mean like a political opinion or social opinion, but I mean sentence structure and some word usage. Do you think that becomes a problem for students who already are struggling with grammar? And then you have Grammarly.
Being honest, if they were doing something in Grammarly, they had a subscription with the Grammarly AI and Grammarly suggests, they would just take it and run with it. I mean, that's definitely an error. Spelling and composing is very challenging. So being able to break down the task and get feedback. Khan Academy has been using Khanmigo, which is it's a classroom based solution where teachers can give the students an assignment and then through AI, it gives the student feedback on their written work. So it kind of takes them step by step through the process. There's lots of exciting applications for these technologies, especially for students that have challenges, whether it's reading or written work. The tremendous application. And again, in the last 2 years, there's everything. It's being applied in a really fantastic way.
Yeah, no, for sure. We're definitely on the hype cycle of AI.
Yeah,
we're in the hype cycle of AI for education. This always goes through a particular pattern, right? Very predictable hype cycle. Tons of companies doing it. It always goes into the trough of disillusionment, which is things that were promised or said or whatever don't come to fruition, and this is where companies start going out of business, things don't work, some of those kinds of stuff. When you think about this hype cycle that we're in for AI, and we're definitely at the peak of it right now. What are you seeing as the downside to this? What should we watch for, and what falls out of this, do you think?
For me, it's really exciting considering when I started, the tools we had, it's just incredible. It's somewhat magical, really. The thing is that I think a lot of the solutions they're beginning to look the same. They're just different, physical, objects, but they're using the same AI or the same engine. So it's basically, it doesn't make a difference if I put this pen or this pen, they're using the same AI engine. So the output looks the same. So I think everything's going to look like vanilla ice cream after a while. And I think, things are going to slow down a bit. I think they're sort of catching up. They're using some of the technology that's built in now, but you know, the Chinese are just building lots of these Plaid Note-like devices now. You know, they look physically a little different. They have a button. They put a screen on it. You know, they call it, they give it a new name, new product. But the back end, you know, they're all using some of the same AI tools. You know, they're just different hooks into it. You know, so the output's not going to look that different. The physical object you're using might be different.
Yeah, I think we'll see some consolidation.
I think so. Yeah.
These companies will all start buying each other and they'll consolidate down into just.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing for the end user is, you know, is sort of the cost. So right now they're, you know, some of these companies are charging, you know, premium for the trans subscription, the AI translation services. And so, you know, we'll probably see that come down at some point. So that may be a barrier for certain students and for some of the solutions where there are costs associated with, AI services.
Well, come down or go up. I mean, it could go up because this stuff's not necessarily cheap to do. We're in a sweet spot where all these billionaire tech companies are paying the bills right now, right? But eventually it comes to roost, right?
Yes, comes to roost. Yeah. So but I mean, we're, like I said, I think in the area, especially giving a lot of the tools too, a lot of teachers now have some really powerful tools that they can make a big impact on instructing students that have neurodiverse learning styles. And I think that's really important. And how do we train or work with the teachers, to give them the skills, the AI skills, the instructional skills and the strategies to utilize some of these tools that they can provide, quality, instruction for students that need tasks broken down or concepts broken down so that they're more comprehensible is really important, really important.
I haven't thought of this until you said it, but, in ChatGPT, in OpenAI's version, I have the ability, and some of them they're starting to do this, but I have the ability to put a text file or there's a text section where I can tell it some things about me. Do you think if I listed as an example, and I'll just speak about me, that I might have some ADHD tendencies,
right?
That I struggle in the area of dyslexia, which I do. And I have no focus.
Right. Okay.
Do you think I could tell? I don't, it's horrible. Surprisingly, though, it makes me a really good podcaster because I'm always in the moment for what's happening right now. Right. I'm always listening.
And it's highly stimulating.
It works great as a podcaster. Yeah. But do you think I could tell the AI that, and would it custom, in your experience, could it custom build its inputs back to me or the way it works with me, knowing those conditions, knowing those diagnoses?
Right.
To give it responses that might be different for me based on those conditions that I might have. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, I think, that whole idea of the prompt engineering, would be, you can definitely, definitely utilize. I think that would be, it'd be interesting to, to take a look at that.
One of the things I've told it is always ask me two questions that make me better, that create a better prompt for me when you're done. So it gives me the answer and then it gives me two prompts to say, hey, what about this? And what about that? And then I get a chance to rewrite the prompt based on or tell me how I could do this better. Like, how could I have done? I did this long process and I was like, boy, that's a long time. Is there a way I could have done this better? And it was pretty opinionated about you could have asked for this in the beginning.
And, for some students, I mean, even if they wanted to try this too, if they took some handwritten notes in a class, they could, certainly take a picture, upload it, have ChatGPT or Copilot, transcribe it and then ask it questions like, do you think I missed something in reference to this concept or idea, fill in the blank. So there's lots of different ways to approach this. And I think, what's exciting for me too is, the ability to, take a video and get a transcript or take an audio file and get a transcript or a summary, or just, get a mind map. I mean, it's just, the ability to take different formats and change it is really important for some of the neurodiverse students that I work with.
Brian, in the early days of AI, it had some problems. It went off the rails. It got racist sometimes. It would get angry. It would fight you, right? I think they've built some rails right now to keep it from doing that. But there is some complaining going on in the AI space that AI is now too nice to you, right? It's not critical enough. It doesn't like you, it always tell you the answers you want to know. You know, just today, by the way, this is an opposite example, but I'm working with solar here at the house, trying to learn some things about it.
Right.
And I said, hey, what if I took 6 solar panels and put them on this device? And it was like, yeah, you shouldn't do that. Like, that's a bad idea. Yeah. It was the first time in a while I'd gotten a very negative response to it from AI, because in the past, everything I've given it has kind of been sunshine and rainbows as far as. Yeah, have you run in the education space? Does that matter at all?
No, I mean, I use AI a lot myself for the work that I do. But I haven't really run into that. By the way, how many solar panels do you have on your roof?
Right now, so no roof. We're keeping them on the porch. I just have 2 because I'm testing them out. But today, I was asking ChatGPT. I said, hey, I'm thinking about putting 6. And I know that overpowers the battery that I'm using, but what do you think? And it was like, you should definitely not do that.
Yeah, we have.
Like, wow. Okay.
We have 11 panels on our roof.
How many watts are those? Are those panels each?
Not sure. And then we have 2. And then we also have 2 Tesla batteries in our garage that can offload the power. So we can go about maybe 3. I mean, without any sunshine, we can probably go 3 days, which is, you know, we occasionally hear what happens. A tree comes down on the wire and, you know, we're out of power for 3-4 hours. So that gives us, you know, some peace of mind. You know, it wouldn't help. We have a lot of folks here that have the Generac or Kohler generators, you know, that are run off of gas, you know, natural gas. But
Well, and I'm not thinking in Nebraska, the power's fairly reasonable.
Yeah.
From a pricing standpoint, right. We live in a good spot.
That's good.
So replacing everything 100% with solar, it the payoff just isn't there. But there are some things like, you know, I run some crypto stuff that takes a little bit more energy than most. Right. And it would be kind of nice from a peace of mind standpoint, sleeping at night, knowing that those servers are powered off the sun on a regular basis.
Yeah. Right? So through payments through the years, a certain amount of money was going to like our energy companies to utilize solar. And so the private companies have gotten grants. So it didn't cost me anything for my solar panels So that was nice. The batteries did cost me something, but the panels themselves were installed free of charge, which is kind of,
well, that's kind of nice. I didn't take a lot of those subsidies are ending here at the end of the year, and I didn't take advantage of them. I'm not building a big enough of a solar farm for it to really matter. It was more, for me, it was actually more an exercise in, I wanted to learn more about solar power experience as opposed to just reading about it.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, speaking of doing your homework, right? I wanted to actually do the homework. I could ask AI all day.
It's kind of the app is kind of interesting because it, you know, it shows you, you know, how much energy is being produced, how much is going back into the grid, how much of it, you know, and then it will, you know, it'll look at the weather patterns and it'll say, oh, it looks like a storm is coming, so we're going to charge your batteries up to 100%. I mean, so there's a lot of really great technology built into the, you know, the app and the way it communicates. Yeah.
No, listen, I'm addicted to the app. So I had been a Blue Yeti battery guy, and then I started working with it and realized it didn't have all the bells and whistles of an EcoFlow, right? These are all kind of consumer grade batteries, much less than your Tesla batteries, right? From that standpoint, but kind of consumer grade, meant for camping or RVs, or they're starting to get into the house market. But I'll show you here. This is a very addicting to me. So here's the graph today. I only have 200 watts of solar power, but the yellow is what came in during the day that helped supplement the power usage, right? Uh-huh. So you can see I've used a 9.25 kilowatt hours for the day. Right. And again, the yellow figures. So, and then on the app, I can see the solar power coming in that during the day I can see remotely, because EcoFlow is awesome.
Yeah.
You can, I can log in on my app and see, hey, where are my solar panels at right now? There's something addicting about watching the sun charging your battery, so to speak.
Right.
And so, yeah, much like that, the EcoFlow provided me an app where I could see what power is coming in and such.
Yeah.
And so flip you over to the other side. We'll look at yours.
Yeah. So this is the, it's showing right now.
This is the Tesla.
This is
the Tesla one. Yeah.
Yeah. So it tells you right now, it's, of course, it's not creating anything. I'm using 2.7 kilowatt hours.
Do you ever have to draw anything from the grid?
Occasionally, a very small amount, Yeah. So, but it's a nice system, and what was nice is that they basically locked in what we do pay the for electricity. We do pay a small amount, but it doesn't make a difference if we're we're running the air conditioning, all day and night. It's still going to cost us like $60 a month, which is
nice.
Yeah, so it's nice. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, when it's the hottest and the sun is out, that's when you want power for your air conditioner.
Correct.
Right. So, some of those things kind of offset, but I have certainly going with the EcoFlow battery in the app. It has been such a much better experience to help me understand, like, The other point or the other thing I'm thinking about is, where do I put those solar panels to get the maximum sun usage? So rather than, there's some stuff you could do to kind of figure it out. But I'm like, you know what? I want to get some live data over the fall here, and I'll just see. I'll just test it for what I have. And that's super cool. Anything, Brian, anything else from a gadget perspective that we missed in your cache of devices there? If there's one thing I would buy, is that pen that's got the camera on it, because that seems to get the best of both worlds. You can write and you can get a transcript
as well.
INQ, right?
Is that INQ, one? INQ, yeah, that's the play on words. So I mean, just that, just things like, this is an e-ink device. This is the Books Pama. And again, students might, students can, download the Kindle or Audible book and carry this with them and use it as kind of an e-reader. It's very portable. It's the Books Pama, P-A-L-M-A. This is the original one. They have another one. It's basically e-ink, so it stays charged for a long period of time. So it's like a Kindle e-reader. And it also supports text-to-speech, so students can listen to their books on the device as well. And it's very portable, which is nice.
Brian, e-ink seemed like a gimmick a couple years ago, 4 or 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But in the space, I told you in the pre-show, Sammy bought one of those. My daughter bought one of those. Remarkable, right? Is that the name? That's Remarkable?
Remarkable, yes.
I think I called it Incredible when I was telling you about it. It's pretty incredible. Remarkable.
Yes.
But she loves that thing.
Yes.
Has e-ink found its space in note-taking and education? Is this the...
It's still very niche because of the pricing. I mean, if the pricing came down, I would definitely see it. Most of the decent devices can run anywhere between $300 to $700, $300 to $700. And so a lot of people say, well, why would I buy that, as compared to an iPad that I can buy for $300? So that's the thing. It's a niche market. It is growing. There are some new companies coming into the field. I think Remarkable probably has the brand name recognition, there are some really good, note-taking products. I mean, the writing feel is fantastic. I mean, the Remarkable now has total searchability of your handwriting, so you can search, on any term that you think you may have written a note about with a Kinect subscription. Rata Supernote is another excellent device that has very unique features for people that are serious about taking notes. The feel and some of the features, for creating keywords and searching, is really, they're on top of their game. But it's still a niche market. You know, E-Ink does well, not only selling to, you know, Amazon for their Kindles or for these e-readers, but they're also used as for, you know, point of sale displays. Like if you go into like Kohl's, they're using E-Ink, you know, to display prices. There's also now color e-ink devices that are being used for transmitting, you know, photographs and pictures and, you know, directional signs, you know, bus depots, things like that, because they're very low energy. So yes, they found their mark in different niches. The handwriting, note taking is one small niche. Yeah.
Dan says in chat, he said, "Ooh, I'll have to hop back on for the ink part back on." I was in the office a lot. I always wanted to use a LiveScribe pen.
Right.
And Brian says in chat, he says, "A nice product." Talking here about the note, the super note. He says, "But it's tough to spend that much for a product that focuses on a couple of uses."
Right.
You just said, I mean, I think, I don't know. Let me ask you this question. Would you, if your phone, if you could have an e-ink phone that got a week worth of battery life, as opposed to, now knowing you can't do as much on e-ink as you do like regular,
right.
Do you think you'd go with an e-ink phone knowing you could get a week of battery instead of a day, so to speak?
I don't think so. I wouldn't. I mean, cause then I'd lose out on it's not a great performer when you're watching YouTube videos or things like that. The refresh is low, but again, I think there's a new Remarkable called the Remarkable Paper Pro Move, which is half the size of Remarkable 2, and so it's meant for that portability. So again, maybe something, you know, as big as a iPhone like Pro Max with an e-ink that you can use it for, you know, reading your Kindle books, Audible, listening to music, and taking notes might be a really good a companion kind of tool, I think, is a good way to
put it. You know, it might be interesting, and they'd be $5,000 phones, just to be clear. But, you know, you got your traditional up front, and then, you know, I've been just the other day, I saw a friend who had a fold.
Yeah.
But instead of it folding from behind, I could just open this part up, and the backside of the phone would be ink.
Yeah. Right? I think I've seen a couple of Kickstarter. I don't know if they ever finished up, but yeah, that was definitely super expensive to be able
to get a regular screen and an e-ink screen,
right,
and all the hardware you would need,
yeah,
in the right size. It would need to be a phablet size for sure. You wouldn't, this is a regular size phone, and you necessarily wouldn't want to be writing on this thing,
right?
But the phablet size, maybe that half, that the front part is a phone, but then your phone is kind of a tablet.
Yeah.
You know, and you're kind of like, I don't know, that maybe that's a, maybe so, a bark.
Yeah. The wrong Dan way. Said that the Supernote looks like Remarkable. Very cool. Yeah, it does. It has a little bit different writing experience, but the Supernote Rata, they really focus in on adding really important features for taking notes. So not only can you search your notes, you can create keynotes, you can create headers, and then basically create like sort of a table of contents of your notes. So they're really focused on the note taking, not so much as the maybe reading of books. You can import PDFs and do some annotations, but it's primarily a note taking tool.
Yeah, e-ink from a reading standpoint is pretty good, though, right? I mean, that is a good application.
Yeah, it's interesting because some of the companies, the purists like Supernote, they don't have a any kind of front light or backlight mechanism, because they want to keep it as kind of true a writing experience as possible, because the light adds another layer between like this tip and what you're writing, the substrate that you're writing on. So some, you know, the new Supernote Paper Pro and the Pro Move do have, lights, you know, front lights, just like the Kindle Scribe does, which again makes for a better reading experience. A lot of folks who are using the Supernote, you can sideload and transfer information to Obsidian. I don't, but there are a number of, you know, folks on YouTube who actually show you how they can take their notes and move them into Obsidian to create that second brain experience. Yeah.
I'm after this conversation, you know, I might be convinced I might be an e-ink guy for my notes at work. Like, yeah. I'm still writing.
Right.
I don't necessarily need them to always be transferable to an an electronic source.
Right.
But there may be moments. Sammy was showing me some things on her Remarkable where she's like, hey, you can do this and that and this kind of thing. That may be an area where because with e-ink, I could probably completely get away from paper. I still keep, and I have a whole bunch of them behind me.
Right.
I still keep half-size notebooks, and I still use those for daily tasking.
And the other thing too is you probably, you know, in your work, you fill out a lot of forms. And so like when I was at the university and I was interviewing students for the program, I would just import my, you know, my interview form in a PDF format. I would fill it out with my, you know, my handwritten notes, and then I'd send it off to the, you know, the registrar, and we'd be good to go. So from that point, it's very powerful. And you could also, with a Connect subscription, you can, you know, always turn your handwriting into text and then send it, you know, to your computer and do what you have to with it.
Yeah, I don't, you know what, I could just type it in if I wanted it in my computer. I think sometimes, to your point, my daily tasks are written and my writing is typed, right?
Now
I separate those two.
Right. Now the Remarkable does have a, you can purchase a typing, you know, basically a keyboard component that connects to it if you want to use it for that purpose. And things like the Supernote, the Onyx books, you can always connect a Bluetooth keyboard if you wanted to, if you wanted to type.
Yeah. Look at right here. This is, by the way, a 8x11 piece of paper folded four ways. And then I tear it. And I have four pieces of notes that I keep down here at the desk. This is the size I like. You can see the notes on the left and some other notes on the right. I don't know. I just for daily tasks and things like that, I'm definitely a writer. Brian, there's 1,000 ways I could keep lists digitally.
Yeah.
I resist it.
Yeah. You know? So I see Anthony said that he realistically just needs syncing of OCR PDFs and English. Ian does it best with its mail to feature.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the Remarkable does a good job, too, as well as, you know, you can take, PDFs, import them. They have an app for that, or just you can actually scan it using the app as well. Then you can complete them, email them, do what you want with it. So it's kind of interesting. Yeah.
It is an interesting, I guess my point is, and all that is we all have a unique style.
Correct.
Of the way we are productive.
Yeah.
And kind of hacking that productivity engine inside of us to say, hey, what gets it to be more efficient, or what gets it to be in Ryan, in your case, I think for notes, for me, that writing feature, we know from research that when you write it down, it has a different, at least for me, it has a different connotation than when I type it out. And so writing it down makes it, I almost got commit to it when I write it down is when I type it out. I'm like, well, maybe.
As you see, I have access to a lot of things. So I kind of choose different devices. I mean, like in the evening, I sort of journal, reflect on my day and put tasks together using my Supernote. But when I'm in meetings and I do have permission to audio tape, I'll use the LiveScribe pen because I can then use the AI component afterwards. I mean, and the workflow is important. Like I was on a business call talking to a new company and possibly able to consult with them. So I took notes with my handwriting. They were transcribed, and then I can interact with the agent, and the agent was able, I said to the agent, can you tell me 5 activities that I can do for this company? And it just, so like that saved me a lot of time you know, and then I could just basically copy and share the text and put it into my proposal, you know. So those are the, just depends on what your workflow is, you know, and how you intend to use it, you know.
I got a question today from a customer asking, like, hey, I'm coming back to this coaching thing. What are some tips? And like, that's not rocket science. I just asked, hey, ChatGPT, what are some tips like for this person come? And it was, I mean, and I read them all and they were all really good suggestions.
I know.
And you're just like, here you go. And they're like, oh, thanks. I'm like, by the way, I wrote that with my friend. My ChatGPT friend. Like, just to be clear, these aren't my ideas. Right?
As I share with you, I was putting together a marketing plan, and you know, in my prompt, I put certain things, and it just like it nailed it to a T. It even mentioned the name of the conferences that they should be exhibiting. I took it out because I wanted, you know, that's my intellectual property, you know. Right. But it was like right on target, right on target.
Yeah. Jim Shoemaker, we'll wrap this up with this. He says, my needs are pretty simple. OneNote, you know, and you know what? This is sometimes in the gadget space. Listen, I've been doing this gadget podcast for almost 15 years, right?
Right.
And sometimes we're looking for a gadget to meet a need that isn't really there, you know?
Yeah.
And so I don't want to, in some cases, I don't want to complicate something to be more than it should. But certainly I always encourage folks, hey, find the system that works best for you.
Absolutely. Anyway,
that doesn't mean it's great for everybody, just to be honest. Sometimes in this tech space.
But you know, I have a tremendous love for fountain pens. And so, I do use them occasionally, you know, for writing letters and taking notes when I'm feeling up to it. But, you know, having notes in a digital format is really important to me.
One of my favorite pens is this Gallup pen where I work, and it's got a writing. It has ink on one side, and then a highlighter. Beautiful,
priceless,
beautiful. I have had these down on my desk for maybe 5 years. I'm just gonna say, I have two of these. For whatever reason, I can't lose them.
Yeah.
And they just keep showing up.
Yeah. And, you know, Anthony points out, going between programs can be problematic. Yeah. And so it's important to, you know, do things consistently. If you want to be effective with some of these tools, it doesn't make a difference if it's just, you know, paper or pencil, but, you know, just getting some consistency is really important.
Yeah.
Yep.
Dan says it, and I'll end it on this one. He says, sometimes less is more, as they say. And I think that's true. Sometimes we can get so into solutions.
Correct.
And we have so many products, and then you're like, hey, I'm trying to integrate this in with that and make sure this digital piece comes over here and then this and that. And you're like, you know, you could have done that with a piece of paper.
I know. It's like,
well, okay. Well, but at the end of the day, you know, I was going to say, you know, sometimes we fight over like what's best. Oh no, this is best or that's best. Well, what's best for you, friend? Like what is it? What works? What's the thing that works for you?
I know it's hard, but it's also, if you have the opportunity, sometimes college students do because the certain departments may be able to give them access, is really, you know, students need to trial these things and use it for a while and kick the tires. A lot of this can be expensive and in the end may not work. So it's great if you can find places where you might be able to, you know, try it out before you purchase it.
Brian, 2.5 years ago, last time you were on, I asked you this question at the end of the show. I'll ask you again. As you look ahead, what are you excited about? Like, what's the future? What has not made it to us yet, but you're seeing signs of in this area that are interesting you that we may not be publicly available yet? Anything?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of work being done, maybe not so much with the students I work with, but in the area of, brain research, where you have basically individuals where they actually connect basically sensors underneath the scalp for brain control, where people who are locked in can basically do word processing by just thinking of the words and then coming out. So there's a lot of that kind of work. And then with AI, it's going to get better as it predicts the words that they're thinking. So it's kind of interesting that their brain, even though they can't motorically write or speak, the brain still fires. And so some of this technology can pick up, you know, the words that they're thinking. So I think we're going to see a lot more development in that area.
Makes you kind of wonder if Stephen Hawking isn't right. Like, yeah. Oh, if I just had lived, if I just been born 30 years later, you know, think of what we could have gotten from him.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, I thought, you know, years ago when I first saw like word prediction, I was blown away. And then, you know, the AI technology just takes it to a whole new level.
Yeah. Yeah. No, helpful from that standpoint. Brian, thanks for taking a few minutes tonight to join me and to get caught up with you. Hey, if folks want to follow you, I'm sure you're still doing stuff. Where can folks find you if they want to dialogue?
I've been doing a lot of work on LinkedIn. I do a lot of posts. They also have my emails, brian@assistivetech.com. They can get in touch. And I do, you know, just for folks in your listeners, I mean, I do webinars and presentations for school groups, parent organizations. And so if anyone's looking for a speaker on assistive technology, you can certainly do that virtual. And I'm on LinkedIn, almost daily. Yeah.
I find you there and dialogue with you. Super friendly. Thanks for taking a few minutes to jump in. Great to catch up with you. Let's not make it 2.5 years. Listen, the invitation is still open. When you have got something to talk about, shoot me a note.
All right.
It's always good. Can you hang around while I close it up and then we'll let you go? Okay. A couple of reminders on the way out for folks. One, if you want to join us in the conversation around the Discord group, you can join that today, theaverageguy.tv/Discord. If you want to send me a message, you can always email me. That's probably the easiest way to do it, jim@theaverageguy.tv. And then don't forget theaverageguy.tv platform, both web and media hosting, which is important, web and media. Powered by Maple Grove Partners, get secure, reliable, high-speed hosting from people that you know and you trust. And you know that's Christian. By the way, Christian's back on the show September 25th, so a couple weeks from now. We'll be taking next week off for 9/11. I just thought it'd be, I know it's been 24 years, but I thought it'd be good not to podcast on 9/11. So we're taking that time off next week. Brian, you were super close. You lived in New Jersey when that happened, right? Or were you?
I was working in a school and you could see the smoke from New York, you know, in the skyline. It was the most beautiful. It was the most beautiful day. It was a gorgeous day. Yeah. I was heading into the school building when we heard what happened.
No, it's funny. I can remember I was driving from our offices at 45th and Dodge to 132nd and West Center. It's funny how you remember 132nd and West Dodge. It's funny how you remember those details. And I remember I heard it on the radio first and they were saying, oh, a small plane has run into the, you know, the World Trade Center. And then of course we didn't know at the time. And by the time I got to the office and we'd been there a few minutes, we watched live the second plane strike the building.
I know.
So no show next week for 9/11. It just felt like it'd be good to have that night off. We'll be back again on the, let's see what the date is. We'll be back with on the 18th with Miles Spencer from Reflecta. And so it's an interesting one. You want to come out live for that one. This, Brian, is where you can take memories and words from someone who's passed,
right?
They'll recreate that person for you if you have recordings of them. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. No, I saw these guys a couple years ago and it wasn't quite ready for prime time. They reached out to me and said, "Hey, can we come on and talk about it?" I'm like, "Of course."
That's cool. So,
Miles Spencer, there, I forget what his position there, CEO or something, is going to be joining us on the 18th and on the 25th. Christian joins us again. We are live every Thursday, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. Those are the times we're going to stick with. And love to have you come out again. Off next week, back on the 18th. Brian, again, thanks for joining me. Appreciate you being here. Always great to have you. For those listening live, thanks for coming out. And with that, we'll say goodbye.